Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh yeah. Alternative news, analysis and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double. Grab your pants.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of September, 2025. And thank you to the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung and I've got Juliet in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning.
How are we going this week?
Yeah, pretty good. I feel like it's an exciting short week because of the public holiday.
Yes.
So I think that's something everyone can look forward to.
Are you? I know you play footy.
Yeah.
Have you been following the AFLM?
No. I'm not a big fan of M in general, so I have not really been following. I watched a few games earlier in the year, like on TV, but yeah, I've been going to quite a bit of AFLW, which is more,
Yeah, awesome. So
vibe.
Yeah, so you have no... You're not really that invested in who wins this week.
No.
Yeah.
No. I must admit, I think I do know who's playing, but I did have to think about it.
Okay. Well, you're better than me. I feel like who is playing?
I think it's the Brisbane Lions and maybe the Geelong Cats.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Great. Apologies to anyone listening who goes for either of those teams.
Yeah.
And you're highly offended by our conversation this morning. But yeah, a short week is really exciting.
Yes.
A chance to maybe rest.
Exactly.
And yeah, maybe watch some footy as well. Okay, well, let's have a chat about what is coming up on today's show. We're starting off the program by replaying an excerpt from yesterday's episode of Women on the Line. For this week, I spoke to Professor Chelsea Wadigo about her new book, Black Thoughts Matter, Essays on Black Love, Black Power and Black Joy. And regular listeners of Breakfast would have heard Priya speak to Professor Wadigo for last week's Thursday Breakfast. But in this excerpt, we speak about Aboriginal women's voices and perspectives that are often missing from public discourse. And Chelsea also speaks about the importance of embracing rage. So that's coming up first. We'll then be hearing a speech that was broadcast at the Free Palestine rally on Sunday, the 21st of September. So we'll be hearing from Tasneem Samak, who spoke at that rally. At 7:45, we'll be joined by Toad, who is a permaculture designer, community organizer, and co-founder of Permaqueer, and they'll be on the show to talk about all things permaculture, but also Permaqueer's upcoming fundraising web series called Permaculture is Political.
And then at 8 o'clock, we're going to be chatting to Serena from Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action, and we'll be chatting about the recent national climate risk assessment, which came out last week, as well as talking about the need for net zero really be trying to protect against catastrophic bushfires. And then finally at 8:15, we're going to be chatting to Jess, who is a member of Maribyrnong for Palestine, and we'll be chatting about the group's recent sit-in protest at an MP's office and why we need to sanction Israel.
Cool. So another big show for today. So stay tuned. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn the shout.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast, and these are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 23rd of September, 2025. And just a warning that this first article contains the name of an Indigenous person who has died. More than 3 months after Kumanjai White died after being restrained by police on the white linoleum floor of a Coles supermarket in Mbantwe, Alice Springs, the Northern Territory Police Force says it has finished its criminal investigation into the death of Kumanjai White. Yesterday, they reported receiving a final autopsy report into the Walpiri man's death. At a press conference in Darwin, Acting NT Police Commissioner Martin Dole refused to reveal the cause of White's death. The NT's Director of Public Prosecutions will now decide whether to charge either of the police officers involved in the arrest and subsequent death in custody of White. The lack of transparency around this latest police-led investigation, amid the plethora of video and eyewitness evidence from the supermarket, has White's family and advocates questioning why the process has been so delayed. "I know they did something. They haven't been giving us any idea of what happened," said White's father, Walpiri elder Ned Jumpajimpa Hargraves. "It's disgusting." As the wheels of justice turn slowly and in an unclear direction, White's family has taken matters into their own hands by launching their own legal bid for truth-telling and accountability by taking the NT government to the federal court. Kumanjai White's death is one of 23 Aboriginal deaths in custody this year alone. Days after White's death, a senior Wadia man was taken into protective custody in Darwin, where he died a week later. There have been 608 Aboriginal deaths in custody since the 1991 Royal Commission. In other news this week, an Israeli drone strike killed 5 people, including 3 children, in the southern Lebanese town of Bin Jebel, Lebanon's health ministry said. Lebanon's state news agency said the strike hit a motorbike and a vehicle, wounding 2 others. Parliament Speaker Nabeel Berri reported that a father and his 3 children were among the dead, with the mother wounded. Lebanese President Joseph Owen condemned the strike as a massacre and called on the international community to press Israel to respect the ceasefire. "As we are in New York to discuss matters of peace and human rights, Israel continues its ongoing violations of international resolutions," he said in a statement on X. Lebanese Prime Minister Nawaf Salam described the latest attack as a blatant crime against civilians and a message of intimidation aimed at our people returning to their villages in the south. Israel has increased the number and frequency of its strikes in Lebanon this week. In the face of heavy US pressure and fears of expanded Israeli strikes, the Lebanese government is seeking to disarm Hezbollah. Hezbollah has said it would be a serious misstep even to discuss disarmament while Israel is continuing airstrikes on Lebanon and occupying swaths of territory in its south.
Also in the news, climate action advocates have criticised the federal government's updated 2035 emissions reduction target as falling dangerously short of what science demands. The commitment builds on the government's existing 2030 target to cut emissions by 43% on 2005 levels and serves as another stepping stone on the way to net zero by 2050. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said his government knows climate change is real, while Climate Change Minister Chris Bowen said that the updated target would be achievable and ambitious. But experts and climate action advocates widely condemned the target as inadequate. Australian Conservation Foundation Climate and Energy Program Manager Gavin McFadzean said the target range condemns Australian communities to ongoing climate harm and is embarrassing in the face of the climate leadership being shown by our Pacific neighbours and states like Victoria and New South Wales. Wealthy countries such as Australia that have grown economically on the back of coal and gas pollution have the ability and responsibility to make much deeper cuts than this, McFadzean said. The head of Emergency Leaders for Climate Action, a coalition of 38 former fire and emergency service chiefs, also said the government's target range falls dangerously short of what the science tells us is needed. In other news, the United States vetoed a crucial United Nations Security Council resolution demanding a ceasefire in Gaza as Israel expanded its scorched earth offensive on Gaza City. The resolution, approved by 14 of the 15 members of the council on Thursday, called for an immediate, unconditional and permanent ceasefire in Gaza, respected by all parties, the release of all captives held by Hamas and other groups, and a lifting of restrictions on humanitarian aid into Gaza. Drafted by the council's 10 elected members, the resolution went further than previous iterations to highlight what diplomats called the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza after nearly 2 years of war in the Gaza Strip, which has killed at least 65,141 people, according to Palestinian health officials. After the vote, the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, said that US veto was deeply regrettable and had prevented the Security Council from playing its rightful role in the face of these atrocities and to protect civilians in the face of genocide. Unfortunately, the council remained silent at a great cost for its credibility and authority, Mansour added. This demonstrates that when it comes to atrocity crimes, the use of the veto should simply not be allowed. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 23rd of September, 2025, and you're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
The LGBTIQA+ Multicultural Fair Day will be held in the city of Whittlesea this year. Funded by Whittlesea City Council and auspiced by Australian LGBTIQA+ Multicultural Multifaith Council, the fair will have a strong human rights, social justice focus as experienced through an intersectional lens. The event is held in a safe, supportive, inclusive space consisting of art and skills-based workshops by Street Art Doyle Blender Studio, African drumming, recycled fashion and sustainable gardening, information stalls, food and giveaways. The LGBTIQA+ Multicultural Fair Day, Saturday, November 8th, 3:30 till 7:30 p.m. at the Barry Road Community Activity Centre, 36 Barry Road, Thomastown. On-site parking available, entry is free and all are welcome. Whittlesea City Council is a 3CR supporter.
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Time's on my mind when I had to find a sign. Am I
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. First up, we're going to replay a segment from this week's episode of Women on the Line, where I spoke to Munanjali and South Sea Islander woman Professor Chelsea Wadigo about her new book, Black Thoughts Matter, essays on Black love, Black power and Black joy. In the following excerpt, Chelsea speaks about Aboriginal women's voices and perspectives that are often missing from public discourse. She also speaks about the censorship and control of white women editors and the power, the joy, and the importance of embracing rage. This conversation first aired on 3CR's Women on the Line on Monday, the 22nd of September, 2025. I wanted to talk about the power of Black women, Aboriginal women. They center your writing. I think it's clear that a lot of the time, like, you're writing from the lived experience of a Black woman, but for other Black women. That's really clear. And it goes back to what we were saying about not writing for a white audience, even though that's something that has been ingrained in us through various educational institutions and also through the media. So, yeah, I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about Black women, whether you want to talk about them as centered to your writing or to the Black women who read your work. Yeah, I'm happy for you to reflect on that in any way you want.
Yeah, so, I mean, my undergraduate studies was in public health, so I'm not an art student or a gender studies major. But I always return to, I think, Professor Ian Anderson. I always cite him. It's a quote in one of his articles, I, the Hybrid Aborigine, where he talks about our ability to tell a story is earned by explaining our relationship to that story. So the rules that govern Indigenous knowledge production, as I understand them, is that I can't write on things that I don't have a relationship to. And I have written relationship to Black men, because I've had relationship with them, but I've had to write from the place in which I know, not to universalize, and part of my sort of lessons and tips in that particular chapter is this: I struggle with lived experience. I think it's problematic in certain ways, and I don't like the way in which lived experience gets weaponized as well, or universalized, that there is one lived experience that is better than the other. But I have to write from the place in which I know, to share how I came to know, not to assert authority of my knowing. And sometimes it's offering a vantage point that hasn't necessarily been offered. I think, you know, every time I wrote, I think except for a couple of times in the first few years, first year or so of writing, whenever I wrote because I felt like I had something to say. And I felt like there was an element of a conversation that hadn't been, you know, given space. And so it wasn't to assert this kind of, well, this is the world according to me. It was, hang on, there's something missing in discourse surrounding this particular issue. I mean, I remember I think it was the bell hooks eulogies, and all the white women were talking about love. And I was like, yeah, cool, but it was rage. Rage was the thing. And can we talk about rage? And so often it was to fill a gap in public discourse. And of course, the gap would be the voices of Black women every time. And, you know, even to this day, the way in which I experience white women editors telling me what I can write and how I can write it. I mean, just recently I pitched for an article in a very well-known online platform that celebrates academic rigor. And I got questions come back to me, which I provided answers to. And then I was given an outline of the article that I was to write and how many words on this, that, and the other. I mean, the white women just write the article. And even at this point in my career as a writer, we have white women editors saying, we're not comfortable with what you're writing, even though it's your research and it's an evidence base. We're actually going to get you to write something else. I'm going to tell you how much word count for your introduction and the main body and your conclusion. This was literally just 2 weeks ago. So this is a thing, the way in which Black women's voices are being regulated, particularly by white women. in the literary space and the online essay space. And that was another reason for writing this book, was to go, you got to fight them white women. It's a thing. You know, Morton Robinson's Talking Up to the White Woman. It is still as current today as it was when it was first written, sadly. And I just think that more black women writing and fighting is necessary if we want to change the location of black women in the social world that we exist within. But yeah, it's wild to me the way in which the editorial can, like, and the thing is, I welcome critique. I can play by the rules, and I'm used to having resistance to any of the work I do. If you speak truth to power, you're going to have editors that will freak out about it. But it has not stopped the way in which the regulation or what black people can write about, even when it's a stock standard research project. Here's a research project and here is the evidence. Yeah, it's... And what happens in these processes, and what happens particularly for those who are early career, they'll buy the lies of the editors, the idea that they're not good writers, and that in order to be a good writer, that means they have to be like a white writer. Yeah, I guess this was sort of like the pep talk for those who get, you know, and we all get reviewer comments where we go, don't like that. But there is something different, more deeper, that happens to writers who are negatively racialized, particularly at the hands of white women editors, no matter what the topic, no matter what the publication is. So this is also a bit of a pep talk for those who cop that stuff, because it doesn't matter how much standing you have as a writer, you're still going to cop this.
I'm just aware we only have 4 minutes left on our Zoom meeting. So I was wondering if you could very quickly, to end our conversation today, I'd like you to speak on rage. There's a beautiful quote that I wanted to read out. I think it was from bell hooks, who said, "Rage is central to emancipation." And you alluded to that before when you were speaking about the power of rage. So, Chelsea, I was wondering if you could speak to that just for a couple of minutes to finish our conversation for today.
I just think that, I mean, rage gets a bad rap. For me, rage has been a most productive emotion. And I mean, I'm half and half. I'm half rage, half spite. Spite has also fueled so much of my intellectual work. It is precisely because we are told not to do something that we must do it. And so sometimes we take the hits and we think, oh, well, we can feel, you know, it does feel bad when we're up against resistance, we're up against violence. But rage and spite will fuel us through. And I find so much joy in rage. And the policing of rage, particularly for women of colour, is racialised, it's gendered. I mean, we're always presumed to be rageful, not thoughtful. And so I'm insisting on being human, that rage is part of the emotions that I can experience too, but also welcoming the feeling of it. Because if I am comfortable with things, then I won't change a thing. And so we have to be angry at injustice. I want my kids to feel entitled to better. I don't want to be sedated into going, well, good enough, and we can just hope and wait for this another time. No, I'm angry, and we want change. And so rage to me is more central to progress than hope. I've copped a lot of shit from my hope position, but rage has been so more productive. And yes, you need to find ways to channel it, but also find your communities of people to be outraged with, and because with rage comes joy and tears and laughter and all the feelings we get to experience.
That was Professor Chelsea Wadigo speaking on 3CR's Women on the Line. To purchase her new book, Black Thoughts Matter, you can head to the Common Room Editions website by going to commonroom.au/editions/black-thoughts-matter. And to listen back to the full episode, go to 3cr.org.au/women-on-the-line. Women on the Line is a radical intersectional current affairs program making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people. It airs every Monday morning, just after the breakfast show from 8:30 to 9 a.m. And we are going to play a song now before our next segment. This is by Barker, who is a Malian Gapa Bakinji rapper. This is her song Ngamaka featuring Leroy Johnson.
One with my mother, feel her above me. Sun in my face while the riverbed hugs me. But without our mother, then we all have nothing. Can't even fathom the way they mistreat her. Leave her with nothing and suck dry a river. This is a world that we leave for our children. A place left for ruins, cause leaders don't listen. I'm sick of us preaching, they killing our motherland. Best believe she got that upper hand. You heard her, she'll reset herself again. Her biggest mistake was ever creating man. And this is what they done to her. Is it too late to fix? Maybe it's time that they listen to old ways. Cause old ways is the way she's safe for her kids. She's protected us. I wanna stand tall in that one with my mother. But where's the respect when they keep taking from her? Where's all the love and the death and the honor for land that you live on? They breaking the promises. Land of the lucky, not land of the minds. Destroying our country in front of your eyes. And you stuck staying blind. Stuck being quiet to the fact that the future's now dim for our kids. Yeah, greed rules the world. But I got a question. Where do you go when there's nowhere to dig? They poisoned our waters. They're killing our brim. But they suck dry land till there's nothing to give. So as long as them county farms are in beers, my people will have nothing left for rocking.
Have you heard about the news that's come out of the NT?
What news? Fires, floods, chicken flu, what?
No, the payouts.
Payouts?
Compensation for what you went through.
No.
Well, I reckon you should go for it. You deserve every cent and more. I'll back you. You know it.
Oh, sis, you're the best.
Yes, I am.
If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call Link Up Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1-800-566-111.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and we just listened to a song, Yamaka, by Barker, feat. Leroy Johnson. And up next, we're going to be listening to a speech from this Sunday's Palestine rally, which took place on the 21st of September, where various liberation groups rallied together for the 101st protest against Israel and Australia's complicity in the genocide since the onslaught began in October 2023. The rally drew particular attention to last year's ruling by the International Court of Justice that Israel's occupation of Palestine is illegal, and the United Nations' demand for Israel to withdraw its military and settlers by 18 September this year. As the deadline came and went, the West Bank continues to be gripped by the expulsion of families, the terror of armed settlers, new waves of illegal settlement building and repeated assaults on Al-Aqsa Mosque. And at the rally, Tasnim Samak, a Palestinian activist, academic and organiser with Free Palestine Coalition NAM, spoke about nearing 2 years of the beginning of the genocidal assault on Gaza in the face of an imperialist colonialist advance that is going full speed ahead with negotiations reaching no solutions.
I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations, and pay my respects to elders past, present, emerging. Always was, always will be.
Aboriginal land.
It's a very heavy time for us as Palestinians. As you know, today's theme is to focus on the West Bank and the assault on our families in the West Bank, while also demanding the full withdrawal of Israeli Zionist forces from Gaza. And we gather here with the news of this ground invasion into Gaza as we near 2 years since October 7th, which began this genocidal onslaught. Shame, shame. Shame that there is no deal on the table from which to have a pathway forward. We've been calling for ceasefire. We've been calling for an end to the occupation much longer than the call for a ceasefire. And what we have is a military assault against Gaza that's attempting to complete the kind of crimes that a characteristic of the 17th, 18th century, maybe even earlier, but trying to do that in the 21st century. Shame, shame. Shame that the Zionist regime, with the support of the American Empire, is going with full advance, with a full-scale operation that has not ceased a single day of bombing over Gaza. And this has been an awakening for the whole world, including all of you who have been with us for 2 years, seeing protests like never before, consistent, consecutive, disruptive, and yet not even a blip on the Israeli Zionist war machine. Actually, it's the opposite. If you look at Albert Systems, if you look at the American war corporations, they have profited off the genocide of the Palestinian people. Shame. And the advance is much stronger today, the imperialist advance in the region of the, you know, you can call it the Middle East, but also if we look at Sudan, if we look at Congo, and we look at the reception of Donald Trump in the United Kingdom, then we see that this is all part of a greater plan to entrench and forward a kind of colonial era in the 21st century. Shame.
Shame.
That has challenged all of us. It has challenged our knowledge of the struggle. It has challenged our tactics of the struggle. But of course, it has also made us more committed to these values, because we understand, like we understood centuries ago, and we are bringing this understanding front and center, that those in power are motivated by profit, are motivated by greed, and they see no humanity. And that this sense of humanity actually is not workable within their definitions. So when the United Nations just this week announces and declares that there is a genocide in Gaza, after 2 years, what do we call that? When the International Court of Justice is saying that Netanyahu is arrestable, and yet none of the world powers, none of these states that he visits will arrest him, what do we call that? This is the international system working for the interests of those in power and not for any of our interests, and definitely at the expense of the people in Gaza. They are building a world over the mass graves in Gaza. And they are building a world over the mass rapes in Sudan and the child slavery in the Congo. And we know this because this is what they've done to build the modern world that we live in today. It was never finished. That project, that kind of exploitation, that kind of land grabbing, and that ruthlessness and that crudeness of power, maybe it looked a little bit more friendly with the advertisements that we receive, the kind of language we see on the news, but in reality, it is brutal. And it's our job now to be the ones who overturn this kind of world that they are putting forward that accounts nothing to us. Palestinians hold no value in this world. If they did, there would be a table for the Palestinians to sit at, not for the Palestinian negotiators to be bombed as they walk over to meet in the name of a ceasefire. So where are the Palestinians? They are not part of the equation. And the only way forward is for us to continue to insert ourselves into this world. This is a world for us. This is a world for our children. This is a world that will be applied through mass action, through collaboration, through solidarity, and through the clear understanding that the existing world order holds no room for humanity in the current way that it functions. As we near the 2 year commemoration to mark 2 years of this genocide, what we are saying is not another week, not another month, and not another year of the attack on Gaza. This is an attack that should have ended within the first few weeks. But because there is no deal that the Zionist regime will accept, a deal needs to be enforced. And that is what we support. We support strikes in Italy. We support strikes in Spain, in Morocco, in here, in Nam, and in Australia. Let's bring this system to a halt. Let's unite and continue to chant our chant, one that is powerful and one that is historical. The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. Gaza is not defeated. Gaza has not surrendered. Gaza will never be defeated and will never surrender. And long, long live the resistance!
We've been listening to a speech from this Sunday's Free Palestine rally, and this was Tasnim Samak, a Palestinian activist, academic, and organizer who was a big organizer with the Free Palestine Coalition, NAM. And up next, we're going to listen to a new release dropped just last week, which is called Obvious, and it's by NAM-based artist Soli.
Obvious. to know how to feel when you say all the same things to everybody else. Even though I feel your eyes, yeah, your eyes, they say one thing. Something's telling me I can't trust this. Something's telling me I can't want this. Ain't no certainty, so I'm cautious. And if I can read the signs, then I'm off this. 'Cause you never make it feel obvious. Too scared to ask you straight. Right or read between the lines. I wake up and it's too late. I can't say what's on my mind. Now you got me insecure. Second question in the vibe. You my safety in the day. But something's telling me I can't trust it. Something's telling me I can't want this. Ain't no certainty, so I'm cautious. And if I can read the signs, then I'm off this. 'Cause you never make it feel obvious.
I just think that it's ironic that the state of Victoria want to treaty with Aboriginal people but have no issue in destroying our sacred sites.
War is devastating on the environment. In peacetime, the military is a huge user of fossil fuels, a huge driver of nuclear energy, and ultimately the architect of nuclear weapons.
Subscribe to 3CR, fighting for social justice and environmental change.
And to all the people that are so afraid of the solutions to climate change that they choose to live in denial instead, the current solutions to the climate emergency are much easier to cope with than the outcomes that will come if we don't.
Feed Radical Radio. Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 9419 8377.
Follow the sun. Which way the wind blows.
Environmental Film Festival is back, running from the 16th to the 23rd of October across Melbourne, Footscray, Fitzroy and Elwood. Enjoy Australia's premier environmental cinema showcase with 23 films, 14 premieres, 4 talks and 2 community gatherings, all exploring ideas of urban living, nature and beyond. Plus celebrate the team's 15th year with a very special anniversary party. In this time of climate crises, reconsider the world around you and experience how environment is everywhere with the Environmental Film Festival 2025. Tickets on sale now at environmentalfilms.org.au.
Presented by Environmental Films Australia, a 3CR supporter.
Subscribe to 3CR. Where else can you hear radical news, analysis, music and opinions? Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
Thank you, 3CR. We love you.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. And before those messages, we heard the song Obvious by Solly. We are now joined by Toad, who is a permaculture designer, community organiser, co-founder of Permaqueer and former director of Permaculture Australia. Their work explores the intersection of permaculture, systems thinking and queer theory, looking at how we can design systems that care for people and planet in equitable ways. I'm excited to chat to Toad this morning about everything permaculture, as well as Permaqueer's upcoming fundraising web series called Permaculture is Political. Welcome to 3CR, Toad.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us on the show. So for listeners out there, and I guess for myself, who may not completely understand what permaculture is all about, can you give us an introduction to permaculture and also, then your reasons for starting Permaqueer?
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, I understand permaculture as kind of a design framework. Often, a lot of people see it kind of as just a bit of like a hippie gardening practice that might look at some kind of regenerative practices and maybe kind of big custom backyards. But really for me, permaculture is a design methodology. There are certain ethics. There are the three core ethics of earth care, people care, and fair share, and a bunch of design principles on how to design living systems. It's often applied in agricultural settings or very much homestead settings, but I've seen it applied in urban settings, community settings, organizing settings, social settings, and economic settings. It's kind of this really useful framework on how we can build living systems to care for people and planet. Saying that, it has a very complex history, both generative and otherwise. In terms of starting Permaqueer, one of the things that my partner Guy Ritani noticed and I is that there are a number of people who are left out in permaculture. It very much seemed very much a white middle-class backyard thing. And during the COVID lockdowns, a lot of our community, Guy, my partner, is First Nations, I'm white settler, but we're both queer, really noticed the ways in which our communities, who previously might have had some housing and food security, suddenly didn't have any at all. And we were learning this thing called permaculture, and then when things got bad, we actually didn't realize that we set up these huge kind of community infrastructures in terms of food security, housing security. One of our permaculture designs was a dumpster diving redistribution network. We were growing our own food. We were sharing it. And we just kind of saw the ways in which this could be a really practical tool for our communities when things were difficult, but also when things were good as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I think you've really challenged my preconceived notions of what permaculture was about, and it seems like it can be applied to pretty every aspect of our life. And during a time that we're living right now where we're faced with more and more climate catastrophes, genocides, ecocides, what role do you see permaculture playing in how we might be able to reimagine our lives?
I think that's a really beautiful framing because that's, for me, exactly how I approach permaculture. It's reimagining the systems we live within, which means we need to re-examine food production, distribution. We need to be reimagining governance, the appropriate technologies we use. It's kind of how can we take this lens of how we do things and understand how that fits within the ecological limits of everything else. So there's kind of that systems thinking approach of how do we redesign systems to basically be a little bit more, I don't want to say efficient because efficiency looks at like how much more we can get, but how we can build systems that are more resilient, regenerative, and more kind of closed loop is the wrong word as well, but it's the closest one I have. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny, sometimes even just thinking about these concepts where language can be really limiting as well, like you just said, the word efficiency probably isn't the right word, and I often think about efficiency being linked to like productivity, which is like linked to like capitalism, so which I understand permaculture to not be about that at all. So yeah, just interesting to see how sometimes language can fail us when we are talking about these concepts, I'm really excited to talk to you about this upcoming fundraising web series that Permaqueer is organising at the start of October. It's called Permaculture is Political. So let's start there. What's the meaning behind, the title of this web series, the fact that permaculture is political?
Thank you. I think it was Bill Mollison, one of the co-founders of permaculture, who said that permaculture isn't political. But one of the things that we argue is that any land-based practice that is practiced on stolen country that was in part created through the observation of First Nations people and their relationship to landscape, who gets access to land, who gets access to food, who gets to lead systems and be in part of actually changing these systems, is all inherently political.
Yeah, of course. And it's sort of, yeah, I don't know how many things these days aren't political.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's have a chat about the content of these web series. Can you talk about what kind of sessions you'll be running, who will be speaking, and how the whole thing will work?
Sure thing. So it's kind of over three days, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, which is the 2nd, 4th, and 5th of October. It's going to be an online webinar, so through Zoom, which is all going to be pre-recorded. Not pre-recorded, it'll be recorded and then released afterwards as well. We're going to be hearing mostly from people who exist on the edge of these systems. So we're going to be hearing a lot from First Nations people who are often not listened to in permaculture as much as we really should be, from queer communities, from disabled communities, from migrant communities, and Palestinians. So all people who are like working with permaculture and have innovated it even further, but for some reason within the wider permaculture movement, we keep focusing on just white middle-class backyards.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think that that's changing in terms of a shift away from always or listening to and, I guess, for lack of a better word, like respecting the voices of white middle class people in this domain? Do you see there's a shift away from that, or is it something that really needs to be pushed?
I think it's a bit of column A, bit of column B. I think that there are many spaces where permaculture is quite radical. And I want to say that a lot of these spaces, some of them are in so-called Australia, but a lot of them are not.
Mm.
I think that there's this kind of, because this is where a lot of it started, there's this kind of keeping it in the backyard in some ways, which is quite odd. Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll watch this space and we can see where the sort of movement and practice is heading. But to finish off today, Toad, if there are listeners who are really interested in learning more about permaculture, systems thinking, or who would like to attend the upcoming webinar, where can they go to find more information?
Sure thing. Head to www.permaqueer.com. / permaculture is political to learn about our speakers, buy tickets, and just check out to see what we're doing.
Awesome. And then before you head off this morning, is there anything else that you'd like to say? Or, you know, if there are people who want to start engaging in permaculture, like, is there a first step that they can take?
That's a really great question. I mean, start locally. See what's happening in your bioregion. There are 1,000,001 online courses, and that is true. If that's what's accessible to you, that's great. But learning from people who live in your region, who know your climate, who have been doing this work for a long time, and sometimes permaculture doesn't necessarily look like permaculture. So I really invite people to really challenge their understanding of what that is and get a bit creative and get a bit queer with it.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for that, Toad, and thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about, permaculture, but also your upcoming web series, which is, looking to be really interesting and insightful in many different ways.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
We've been speaking to Toad, who is the co-founder of Permaqueer, and we were speaking about their upcoming web series called Permaculture is Political, which is a series of webinars raising money for First Nations and Palestinian organizations. To register for the event or to learn more about inclusive permaculture, go to permaqueer.com. That's P-E-R-M-A-Q-U-E-E-R. Or you can follow them on Instagram at perma.queer. Before our next segment, we are going to go to another song now.
So up next, we're going to listen to a new release from East London singer-songwriter Leung Lawrence, and this song is called Thoughtless, and it's part of her EP It's a Funny Thing.
We're talking about ecological thinning and subsidised longing, but we basically mean the same things, don't we, here?
Wherever there are chemical corporations around the world, they're constantly trying to chip away at regulations.
Earth Matters, bringing you environmental and social justice stories, from developments in government and industry to the campaigns and communities that are standing up to them. Earth Matters plays at 11 a.m. Sunday and 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. Turn your dial to 855 a.m. or listen online at 3cr.org.au.
While the headlines have subsided, the nuclear power plant is still not under control, with the spent fuel rods removed from only one out of four reactors.
law needs to change so that our rights can be recognised, so that decisions in relation to the use and exploitation of our lands is ours.
Hi, my name is Miss Kinnan. I'm a proud Yorta Yorta, Jajarong, Kalkadoon and Yirrindali Aboriginal Sovereign Woman. And you're listening to 3CR, guys. Check in with your friends. Make sure you guys are going good. And also stick up for what's right, yeah? Free Palestine.
Up next, we're chatting to Serena Joyner, CEO of Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action. Serena's an experienced community organiser and has been involved in organisations such as Resilient Blue Mountains, the Festival of Resilience, and also the Macquarie Alliance for Climate. Serena lives in the Blue Mountains on unceded Darug and Gundagara country and has witnessed the impact of loss and threat to community from bushfires and climate change firsthand. And Serena's here to chat about the recent National Climate Risk Assessment released by the Australian Government and the need for stronger net zero targets. But welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Serena.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate you making the time this early in the morning. But could you start off, Serena, by telling us a little bit about the organisation Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action, and you know how the group sort of came together?
Yeah, it's an amazing organisation that was founded by bushfire survivors, people who have lost everything to fire, and we still have members and very active members on the board who lost their homes to a number of fires. But we also feel we're an organisation for people who've been deeply impacted by bushfires. And it doesn't have to mean losing a home. We've heard some people tell us really horrific, traumatic stories that, oh, but I'm not a bushfire survivor. And yet they clearly are. It's just they haven't reached that point of losing their home. It's certainly true the media loves to hear from bushfire survivors who've lost their home. And we find we're a really authentic and powerful messenger for the message on acting faster on climate. And that's exactly why the organisation formed. So we advocate in a very focused way around bringing climate emissions down, carbon pollution down, so that we can all have a safer future.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's such an important point as well, Serena, about, this idea that there's a real spectrum of people who've been affected by bushfires, you know, whether that is people Absolutely. Who've lost their home or, you know, have been affected in other ways. But, I think it's really important for people to just think about, yeah, really the scale and the to which so many people across this country are impacted and, you know, what that really means for our lives as well. I guess some big news in the last week has been the recent National Climate Risk Assessment, which was released by the government. And there's been a lot of climate groups coming out and, sharing their thoughts on the assessment. But, yeah, what... could you talk us through, maybe to start off with, like, what were some of the key findings of that assessment and how is Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action responding to it?
I'm happy to do that. And I want to begin by saying that, you know, many of our members already know how bad climate change can get. And if your listeners will remember, Black Summer was really a shock. It was a horrific time that extended. It actually was a 9-month-long fire season, and it was catastrophic, and it had an enormous impact. 33 people were killed in the fires, but around 450, their deaths are attributed to smoke inhalation and effects. So it had a massive impact, and really we see that as a forerunner of what's to come and what's in the climate risk assessment report. So we know how bad it can get, and we're actually in a way relieved we can talk about this in an honest way now. So what one of the things that the report predicted is that the dangerous fire weather days are going to projected to become more frequent, and there'll be longer fire seasons and the potential for more mega fires. So the potential for more black summer. We've already seen scientific predictions that on the current emissions trajectory, we could see black summer could be a normal summer by the year 2040. It could be a cool summer by the year 2060, which is really quite confronting, and it's hard to imagine. Our regional communities that live on the edges of the bushland surviving that kind of intense fire again and again, year after year. And some of the other things in the report that are equally concerning is that at a 2-degree warming scenario, we'll have twice as many heat waves. At a 3-degree warming scenario, we'd have four times the number of heat waves. And we know heat is one of the most deadly extreme weather events. And so there could be, they're estimating like hundreds more deaths from heat waves. But I think one of the standouts for us that's really important, and I think it's important for the government to be paying attention to, we already are spending, it's costing about $38 billion a year for individuals and the economy on disasters. And this report is saying that we could be looking at 5 to 7 times the cost of for disasters. And if nothing else, I would hope the government would pay attention to that economic impact of climate change.
Yeah, you know, you really do hope, if nothing else, you know, that would get their attention, you know, that real economic cost. But I think that's just so terrifying, Serena, to think about, yeah, that idea of the Black Summer that we experienced in 2019 to 2020, that could be, as you said, you know, a very regular occurrence in the future if we don't act fast on climate change. And, yeah, I guess following the report, there's, you know, lots of discussion about, you know, what's needed in terms of net zero targets. But, yeah, what could you talk us through? What does Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action, what are you advocating for in terms of net zero targets?
The science says at least 75% by 2035. In fact, some scientists argue that because it's taken us a long time, it's been a slow change to begin emissions reduction, we should actually be aiming for 100% emissions reduction by 2035. So disappointed and despairing barely covers it in terms of how we felt listening to the Prime Minister and Minister Chris Bowen and the Treasurer at their press conference last Thursday. They kept using the words sensible, achievable and serious about their inadequate targets. They never once said safe. We're looking for the government to take our safety seriously because climate change, it's spelled out in the climate risk assessment, people are going to die. Communities are going to be uprooted. They're going to be displaced. People will lose their homes, communities will be destroyed, businesses will be lost, and the impact to agriculture will be enormous. So I don't buy the line that they're being sensible. They really tried to put across where they're sensible men in suits, and we don't buy it. We're looking for them for leadership to set a target that could actually have the potential to save Australians, to save communities. So their target isn't adequate. If 70% was a floor and they were aiming to far out exceed that, that would be great. I know they're putting money and a lot of effort, and it's really important to keep building out the renewable energy transition. That's essential. But what they failed to even touch on last Thursday is that they are still expanding coal and gas. So they're still escalating our domestic emissions and the emissions that we send overseas in the form of coal and gas. That's just not good enough. That is the problem. That's where they could be making change and radical change. One of the things that our organisation is part of is a campaign called Make Big Polluters Pay. I spoke about the economic cost of climate change. It's costing $38 billion a year. Yet the Disaster Ready Fund that's to help communities build their resilience is only $200 million a year. It's barely touching the sides. We actually need deep investment in communities to help them be climate ready. What we're saying is these coal and gas corporations, they're taking our resources for almost nothing. They make a huge profit. A lot of that goes overseas and they pay hardly any tax. It's time they pay their fair share. We want them to pay a climate pollution levy that goes into a climate compensation fund. And we think it could raise as much as $46 billion a year. And that would start to help communities in Australia, First Nations communities who are really vulnerable to climate change, and our neighbours in the Pacific, to be much better prepared for the climate change that's locked in and recover from the disasters as they hit the communities.
Yeah, definitely. I think, there's so much money, as you said, that big companies are profiting in the destruction of our environment, and they're paying such a little amount of tax so that I think it is so important to actually be thinking about ways to be finding that money to be supporting vulnerable communities. We do wish you all the best in that campaign. And I guess in terms of the Make Big Polluters campaign and the other work that Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action is doing, how can 3CR listeners find out more about all of that work?
Oh, look, we'd love it if you could visit our website, which is bushfiresurvivors.org. We've got a whole lot of really amazing content on there, including videos, stories from our Black Summer survivors. But on our homepage, there are links to a petition people could sign, really easy, won't take long, for the Make Big Polluters Pay campaign. And we are going to be lobbying the government this November about that campaign. We think there's a big budget black hole for the cost of disasters. We think it makes a lot of sense. And it's one of those economic things that the government could actually solve with this approach. We've also got the Australian Bushfire Survivor Declaration that has 5 climate asks, and that's something people can sign and even send to their MP as well. Obviously, we'd love people to join if they feel this is an organisation that they'd be interested in supporting or being part of. There's a Join Us button as well. We'd love any support from folks out there. Be deeply appreciated.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Serena, for sharing those ways that our 3CR listeners can find out more about your work, and also, really stepping us through, what the National Climate Risk Assessment actually means, and particularly what the implications are when it comes to bushfires, because it's, certainly some really concerning, information out there. And, we really appreciate you making time and coming on our show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We've been speaking to Serena Joiner from Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action about the recent National Climate Risk Assessment and the need for much stronger net zero targets for 2035. And you can find out more about the organisation at bushfiresurvivors.org. And on their website, they've got a lot of information about their campaigns, including the Make Big Polluters Pay and a petition that our listeners can sign if you're interested.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Want to open the door to opportunities? Discover Learn Local, right in the heart of your community. Build confidence in reading and writing. Gain work and life skills while supporting family. Learn Local, a wide range of low-cost courses at over 200 locations across Victoria. Your goals, your way. Visit vic.gov.au/learnlocal-First Nations to start exploring now.
Authorised by the Victorian Government, Melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
This is Jazz Party and you're listening to
3CR. Up next, we're going to be speaking to Jess Barrett, a Yarraville resident and member of Maribyrnong for Palestine. And this diverse group, spanning different backgrounds and political views, has come together to voice ongoing support for Palestine and to ensure that Australians hear the facts about life under occupation and the ongoing genocide in Palestine. And Jess is here to chat about her involvement in last week's sit-in protest in Fraser MP Daniel Molino's office and why the group is advocating to sanction Israel, and also chat about the way that protesters are portrayed in mainstream media. But welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Jess.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show. Well, to start off, as I mentioned last week, you were involved in an action that took place in the electorate of Fraser. Can you tell us a bit about what that involved and, kind of the planning and what happened on the day?
Yeah, we sure can. Maybe just a bit of background and context as to why we decided to take the action.
Yeah, sure.
You know, since October 7th, there's been over 65,000 people being killed in Gaza, including over 19,000 children. You know, that's 28 children a day that are dying every day in Gaza, which is a horrific statistic. And civilians account for 15 of every one of those 16 people killed by Israel since March this year. And 235 journalists and media workers have also been killed. This is the deadliest conflict for media in history. And over 1,500 healthcare workers have also been killed. So the reasons that led up to this action is that we're sad, mad and afraid. We're sad because our hearts are breaking from the ongoing situation. We're mad at our elected officials, in particular the Labor Party, for not taking meaningful action in this space. And we're afraid that, you know, the situation's not getting any better. In our electorate, which is the Fraser electorate, we are represented by Daniel Molino. For a bit of context leading up to this as well, he did meet with some residents about 18 months ago regarding Palestine. During that discussion, he made some repugnant comments around that if he was gay, he would rather prefer to be under Israel and Hamas, like his, you know, Zionist 101 comment. So, we still decided to try and engage with him on the issue in the last few weeks. He has had many requests to meet, and despite that request, he's refusing. He's claiming his diary is too busy, even if we offered to book far in advance. So we decided to occupy his offices last Monday because our voices are being ignored. And he's not taking part in that democratic process. So we were demanding that the Australian government sanction Israel as we are sanctioning Russia. End trade and stop arming Israel and end the diplomatic ties with Israel.
Yeah.
And how we're part of a global escalation calling for action in this space. And what we did on the day was a group took a very peaceful disobedience action to sit in his office and try and deliver a demand in person, in person. And what we also did was played the sounds of the war in Gaza or the genocide in Gaza in his office. So if he's not willing to meet with us and have a discussion on it, we tried to bring the sounds of Gaza to his office and also read out the names of the journalists that have been killed since October 7th during that time. And so later in the afternoon, we were asked to leave by his office, in which case the police were called. Two of our brave souls chose not to move on, standing firm in their support and solidarity for Palestine, and they were arrested and charged with trespassing. So it's part of a wider action around their country this week and last week to support Palestine.
Yeah. Well, I'm really sorry to hear, that members of your group have been arrested. And would you be able to speak a little bit to, what their situation is now, and how you guys are going to keep fighting and drawing attention to sanctioning Israel in Maribyrnong?
Yeah, each of those people have been given their summons notice, so that's got to go through the judicial process that follows that. But from our side, we're going to definitely continue to engage with elected officials. We would like to engage more with elected officials. We definitely want to try and drive home these demands that we're asking around the sanctioning and ending the hypocrisy of the treatment between Russia and Israel. And so we definitely will continue these actions in the future to try and get our elected officials to meet with us.
Yeah, definitely. And would you be able to speak a little bit, Jess? I know you mentioned that similar actions are taking place across the country. A little bit about, maybe what have you seen in other places and kind of what informed the approach that you took as well?
Yep. We understand that people are going to have strong opinions about the actions being taken over the last few weeks. For example, there were some people at the Melbourne docks last week on the Punt Road. Also, I know my mum sure had concerns over some of the actions that I was taking in the MP's office, which is I can understand how people see it from different sides of what does it do. But what I think is being missed in the media reporting is those people that are at the Melbourne docks are trying to stop the weapons exports from going out that is doing incredible harm to Palestinians. So I think that is being missed from the media. And from the actions that are being delivered, it is about the disruption and not being listened to take meaningful action, particularly at the Labor Party.
And it really sounds as well like your group was really trying to draw attention to, what's actually going on in Gaza and to, try to, get the attention of your MP as to, what that sounds like, what that looks like as well. I think a lot of that information is not coming through in our mainstream media. In terms of, how protesters are spoken about in the media, what would be some things that you'd want to share with people to understand, why, protest is needed and, why we can't just, sit back and hope that the government, will take action?
I think it's easy to peg the protest or these activist actions into troublemakers. It's certainly not that. This is not how we would be choosing to spend our time on a regular basis. But again, I come back to that. We're sad, mad and afraid for the situation in Palestine and 28 children dying a day. And so we're trying to turn that despair into action. Action is the antidote to despair, I think is one of those quotes. So we're trying to take meaningful action. We're trying to raise the voice of Palestinians in amongst these actions, raise the situation, raise the awareness, continue, because I think it's easy to switch off and read statistics and forget about it. But we're trying to continually bring that to the forefront of people's minds and actions.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, it's so important to, as you say, go beyond the statistics and think about all the human stories and pain behind what we are encountering, in our social media and in mainstream media to some extent. But Jess, would you be able to share a few ways that people can find out more about, Maribyrnong for Palestine, as well as the Stop Arming Israel movement in Australia?
Absolutely, I would love to. There's plenty of actions, big, small, and medium that people can take, but some of the easier ones is to start following Stop Arming Israel on Instagram, or you can email stoparmingisrael_nam@proton.me. You can join your local solidarity group. So, for example, I'm in the Maribyrnong for Palestine group. There's Bring Bank for Palestine, Hobson's Bay for Palestine. So there's local groups. For those Jewish allies out there, there are a lot of very brave, loud Jewish folk that are supporting this movement. Groups like the Loud Jew Collective are very active in this struggle. The thing is to continue to talk about Palestine, ask questions, research, or share. You can watch a Palestinian movie. There's a lot of good documentaries out at the moment. The other part is Boycott, Divest and Sanction is known as BDS. It's a Palestinian-led global movement that encourages people to boycott large corporations that are benefiting from the occupied territory in Palestine and the genocide. What you can do is download the No Thanks app, and this I take it everywhere when I go shopping, and I can scan a product to see whether that brand or organisation is supporting the genocide. And you can purchase the kefi, which is the Palestinian liberation scarf. Mm. Even my dog has one, which may seem like a bit of a naive action. However, when she's out in a scarf, it enables me to have a conversation with people on Palestine with a cute dog around, which helps.
Definitely.
And the most important thing is to be continuing to talk about Palestine until Palestine is free from the river to the sea.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Jess, for sharing all those amazing ways that people can find out more about the amazing work that you've been doing, and also, you know, finding ways to educate themselves and the people around them too. But, yeah, we really appreciate you making time to chat to us this morning and, talk about these really important issues.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's great to have community. Community radio is such an important part, and also independent media. So thank you very much.
No worries. Well, thank you so much. we've been speaking to Jess from Maribyrnong for Palestine about the group's recent sit-in at an MP's office and the need to push our government to sanction Israel. And you can find out more about the movement on Instagram at StopArmingIsrael_Oz. And which is AUS, and also at Maribyrnong for Palestine, and that 4 is the number 4, not FOR. Plenty of ways to find out more about their work following those links.
So we have come to the end of our show now, and before we give you a rundown on what we had on today's program, there's just a couple of events that we wanted to bring to your attention. So Julia, what's coming up this week?
Yeah, so this week on Friday the 26th of September at 2 p.m. there's going to be the Rally Against Racism, Migrants and Refugees Welcome Here, taking place at the State Library of Victoria on Swanston Street. And then on Sunday, 28th of September, at Unassigned Gallery, they're having a Made in Palestine fundraiser market at 55 Edward Street, Brunswick.
Awesome. So we'll just have a quick chat about what we had on this morning's program. So we started off the show by replaying a segment from yesterday's episode of Women on the Line, where I spoke to Mananjali and South Sea Islander woman professor Chelsea Wadigo about her new book, Black Thoughts Matter, essays on Black love, Black power and Black joy.
And then at 7:30, we heard a speech from Palestinian activist, academic and organizer Tasnim Samak, who spoke at Sunday's rally, in which was the 101st protest against Australia and Israel's complicity in the genocide since the onslaught began in October 2023.
And then we were joined by Toad, who is a permaculture designer, community organizer and co-founder of Permaqueer, speaking about permaculture, systems thinking, as well as their upcoming web series called Permaculture is Political.
And then at 8 a.m. we spoke to Serena Joyner from Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action, and we discussed the recent National Climate Risk Assessment released by the Australian government and what it revealed about the really terrifying threat of bushfires with increases in the temperature, and also the need for stronger net zero targets to avoid catastrophic bushfires. And then finally at 8:15 we spoke to Jess, a Yarraville resident and member of Maribyrnong for Palestine, about the recent sit-in in Fraser MP Daniel Molino's office and why the group is advocating for the Australian government to sanction Israel as part of the broader movement across the country to stop arming Israel.
So that's all we have time for on today's program. If you missed any of the segments that we played earlier today, you can go back and listen back to the podcast later this morning by going to 3cr.org.au/Tuesday-breakfast and stay tuned for breakfast shows later in the week from 7 a.m. onwards. Up next, there's Accent of Women, but for now, we hope you have a really lovely day and a long, brilliant long weekend, and we'll be back at 7 a.m. next Tuesday.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.